CliffCentral.com.
Now it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for Justice Malala and the Burning Platform. It's brought to you every week by Nando's. Why are you so out of breath? You didn't have to run. Did you run here?
He was stuck in traffic. He left his car on the side of the road. He's like one of those people you talked about, Gareth.
What's going on, Justice? Are you all right?
I'm good.
Okay. You ran in here like there was. You know what? If it's 5 minutes,
I love being here. You know, I get all hot under the collar if I'm not here at 7.
All right. You know what? There's never been a week where I've looked at you. You've looked at me, and we've thought, nothing to talk about. If we lived in Canada, we'd really run out of stuff very quickly.
I know, the traffic lights on the corner of Bamboozle and whatever.
Yeah. So let's talk about Oros.
Yes. Can't we start with some good news? I mean,
all right, do you have good news? Let's go with that first.
I thought we should start with the release yesterday, the granting of bail of Bonginko Sikanyile, who is a Fees Must Fall activist at one of the universities of technology in KZN. Mm-hmm. He's been in police custody for 6 months. He wrote his exams in November last year in police custody. Now, when he was arrested, he went to court, applied for bail, and it was denied. He went back, applied for bail, it was denied. And yesterday, the EFF, after 6 months of trying, took the matter to the Constitutional Court.
Unreal.
After negotiation, he was released on 250 rands bail.
You're kidding.
Now, you know, I mean, Mr. Kanyile, whatever one might think about him and so forth, he had the backing of the EFF, of the Fallist movement, and so forth. They don't particularly have money, but they have some resources.
Sure.
The idea of bail is that you know, Mabale does something, and if she's not going to run away, if she's not going to interfere with witnesses and other suspects in the matter, that, you know, she shouldn't be sitting in a jail somewhere just because we think she might have done it. Remember, one is a suspect at this point.
They can't just hold you there for no good reason.
They just can't hold you there.
Why was bail denied twice, and why did they have to take this all the way to the Constitutional Court?
The worst thing is that when the State Council was questioned by Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng, they basically didn't know why they were keeping him there. And, you know, a lot of times the Fees Must Fall movement has said we are being targeted because we are standing up to the state. We are being shot at. You remember that case of Shaira Kala, who was just basically shot at a close range with rubber bullets. And mm-hmm. So the question becomes, what exactly is going on here? And why was this guy kept in custody for so long, when the reasons for it were not even clear to the state council?
I mean, just on the basis that no South African, whether you like them or you don't like them, should be held in police custody for that long with no good reason is outrageous.
It is shocking.
This is the kind of thing that happens in an authoritarian state where you have no rights.
We know when it happened. It happened in 1986 when 16,000 young people under 18, were in police custody. They were detainees without trial. We can't have the same thing here. Because I don't like your politics, I just keep you in jail indefinitely for 6 months. Why hasn't he been charged? If he's been charged, why isn't he being given bail? And why is it when it finally comes, it's set at 250 rands? This says to me that this guy should not have been in custody for 6 months.
All right, but who's to blame for this? Because we often hold up the courts as being the final bastion of sense and rationality.
Yeah.
You know, we can't rely on the legislature because it's a circus. Yeah. The executive is clearly pursuing its own ends with regard to the survival of the president and nothing else. and we've got ministers who wantonly go against the will of the people and make sure that, you know, things like social grants aren't paid. So the courts, we usually say, oh, well, at least that's working. But in this case, this individual has been maligned by the courts.
Yeah, I think it starts with the police. I think that the police took a posture in last year's Fees Must Fall movement. Now, you know, the police have to act. And Mr. Kanyile is no angel. I mean, this is not the first institution he's been at. Where he was expelled from the University of Zululand for some violent activities, allegedly violent activities. Mm. Now, it doesn't mean that just because that happened, he doesn't have rights. He still has rights. But the police, I think, took a decision that they're going to just, you know, what in the past one would use more colorful language, just fuck them up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they became heavy-handed, because those were the enemies of the state. We're going to shoot them. We're going to beat them up. We're going to use rubber bullets. We're going to jail them. The case of that young kid who was put in the back of a police van and driven to a river in Limpopo somewhere and dumped there, is an incredible case. So I think that the police, one, decided to take a political stance. Two, the prosecutorial service, the NPA, basically went along and behaved not in a judicial manner, but in a, yeah, we're going to show them and we're going to buttress what the police did.
It's almost adversarial.
It's adversarial, but it's also, we are in cahoots. We are not upholding the law.
Mm.
It's these bastards want to bring down the state. It's conspiratorial.
But it's also victimizing a victim.
Exactly.
This guy is not a man of resources. You say he's no angel, but that shouldn't matter.
That shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter at all.
The law should apply equally to all of us.
And this is the nub of the matter. How many people out there today have been arrested and should be out on bail and cannot or do not have the resources of the Fees Must Fall movement? If you listen to Julius Malema yesterday, he said, oh, we must have spent about R500,000 on legal resources for Boinko Sikanyile and others. A guy in Hammanskraal, a guy in Kroonstad somewhere, doesn't have those resources. He's got a state lawyer, maybe, if they're lucky, who is dealing with 500 cases on their books.
You know,
it's impossible.
Justice, I've been to the awaiting trial prison in Pretoria. We did a show from there once when I was still at 702. It was one of the most frightening things I've ever seen. First of all, they have to share beds because they have to rotate the beds. It's packed to the brim with people who are so desperate. Some of them just don't have papers. They're illegal immigrants. Some of them are people who've been arrested for petty crimes like possession of, you know, a tiny little bag of dacha. It's ridiculous to me that there are so many people in this country who are just, they are, the only way you can describe them is victims of a state that does not care about them.
Yeah.
And if you think about those people who are locked up in that awaiting trial prison, and you think about how there are 100 people who were effectively murdered by the state, these mental patients, and nobody's been arrested for that, it seems that the NPA, and the word is capricious, they are capricious. They decide on a whim who to prosecute and who not to prosecute based on their own political objectives, which are handed down to them by the executive.
Yeah.
It's outrageous.
It's
this is not how a good state runs.
But we've got people who have been awaiting trial in our prisons for 7-8 years. I wrote a piece, I think it was way back in 2004, of a woman who'd been allegedly a hijacking kingpin, queenpin, who'd been in detention for 10 years. It was a lady from Soshanguve. Now, the thing is, bring the case, charge them and take them to court. If they are found guilty, then they will go and serve time. But you cannot keep someone for 6 months in jail, as we did, Boinko Sikanyile, for 6 months.
No.
And then, for what reason? This guy had to write his exams in jail. And there's something fundamentally wrong about that. It means we don't care about the law. We just said, we'll take him out. And we've taken him out. And it's okay. It's not okay. Well, okay, we can talk about Oros now.
Well, no, wait, because we're on the EFF, because they were so involved with this case. Let's just carry on with them, because they put up a motion in Parliament this week for the expropriation of land without compensation. It was roundly defeated.
Yeah.
But we have a president who speaks with a forked tongue. And that, I'm trying to be kind, because he says, no, we've got to have expropriation without compensation.
Yeah.
That's what he tells people as in his populist
stance. He said it on Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, he wants people to think that's what he wants, but really the ANC votes against it.
This is the case of talking left and walking right. You know, you can't continue to say this stuff without saying, hold on. Am I going to do it or not? So one of the things that since January 8, February 9 at the State of the Nation speech, you know, if you walk around and, you know, I'm trying to impress Mabala, I'll say, oh, you know, I'm for radical economic transformation. And justice is so radical.
Progressive. He speaks my language.
He speaks my language. It's amazing. But where's the content in this thing? And so if you're going to talk about it, whether I agree with it or not, talk about it and say, I'm going to do it, and do it so that I know that if this is this is what I'm working with. Not, oh, we're going to do this, but it's all about, oh, I'm going to enrich this one family, or I'm just doing this to, you know, it's just words.
Well,
and
maybe it's just about, it's such a blatant disregard that it's just placation.
Yeah.
It's just saying to the ordinary people of this country, well, I know if I hang this carcass in a tree, you'll all start baying for blood. That's all it is.
That's what it is. And sadly, the EFF exposed all that with this motion. So the EFF was defeated. And quite interesting, so yesterday I was in Cape Town. At the airport, I meet this guy who used to be with the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, PAC. Mm-hmm. Now, the PAC was famous for, you know, if you talk about expropriation of land without compensation, the PAC has been very clear about this since its formation in the 1950s, that's our policy, that's what we go for. 1994 comes along, that's what they stand for. And this guy who I met yesterday was weeping at the airport. I said, guy, are you okay? He says, you know what? We, the PAC, were voted against the EFF in that vote. And I thought, wow.
How the far PAC, you come.
Exactly.
But also, it does show you that there's probably not the amount of support for this kind of expropriation without compensation that the EFF were hoping for, even in the broad public, because if you don't respect property rights at all, how do you know once you've got the land, anyone will respect your rights?
Exactly. You know? So, I mean, the EFF still makes a loud noise about it, but the EFF in the National Assembly is just 6.35%. And so that's why they lost, and that's why they were defeated. But it was interesting because it exposed Jacob Zuma's hypocrisy on this matter.
Right. Now, can we talk about Oros?
Okay. Oros goes to KZN. Oros stands up and says...
Oros is Colin Maine, by the way.
He's the president of the African National Congress Youth League, which has been led by many, many great and amazing people, including Nelson Mandela and others, and was formed in the 1940s to make the ANC a little bit more radical and for the ANC to stop having tea with the Queen, as Julius Malema once said, and start being a fighting force. So... Colin Maine, who has a big house in Pretoria, a nice house, also sponsored by a bank that is associated with the Gupta family. Oros Maine stands up in KwaZulu-Natal and says, you know, in the past we used to deal with people like Pravin Gordhan, who are impimpis. Impimpis is a sellout spy for the opposite, the contending force. In the 80s, it was the apartheid regime, and therefore, you know, there was the real issues around selling out your comrades to the apartheid regime. So he says, we've got to do something to this guy. Not about him, to this guy.
And what did they used to do to impimpis?
I used to necklace them. You'd take a petrol tire, douse it with petrol, a car tire, douse it with petrol, and put it around the neck of a human being and set it alight and watch them and dance around them while they die a slow, horrific, horrible death. Asphyxiation, burn wounds, all that, if you're not puking by now, just the thought of this thing, I don't know. But this is what the leader of the ANC Youth League says must happen to Pavin Gordhan, who in the 1980s fought against apartheid, who in the 1970s fought against apartheid, who in 1990 was among those who were nearly arrested in Operation Vula, where Mike Maharaj was arrested and put in chains and wasn't even allowed to go and bury his mother. In fact, when he went, finally was allowed to go bury his mother, he had to go to his mother's funeral in chains. You should see the pictures. It's horrific. These are people who gave the best years of their lives to freeing this country. And Colin Maine, who has a big house in Pretoria, thanks to the Guptas, arrives and says, you must burn, you must necklace the finance minister. You know, I don't expect...
I mean, that's hate speech.
That's hate... at so many levels. It's so wrong.
We always wonder what hate speech looks like when it sounds like... There it is.
It looks like this. It sounds like this. It is this.
So
but,
why is he not being prosecuted?
It's not even prosecuted. Let me tell you this. The big issue here is that the African National Congress of South Africa has done nothing, zero, about it. Zizi Kotwa issued a statement and went on television saying, it's reckless, it's this, it's that, it's terrible, da, 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 da. What are you going to do about it? Someone says, one of your leaders, one of your cabinet, these people sit together on the National Executive Committee of the ANC. Oops, nothing.
They're probably sitting there laughing about it.
Nothing, nothing. So, you know, there's impunity in this whole thing. We can talk about the Sasa story. I see we've got it on the roster. The Sasa story is that 17 million people might not get paid on April 1. Joke on them.
They had a parliamentary hearing about this, and the minister
didn't turn up.
And the director of that department didn't turn up.
But where was the minister yesterday? She was in, not yesterday, the day before. She was in Soshanguve with President Zuma, on a walkabout to talk about Nyaope. Now, Nyaope is a real issue, is a real problem. But hello, 17 million people, 17 million payments might not be made on April 1. And is the minister, does she care? Is she there? She didn't make it to Parliament. She has treated Parliament with disdain. But you and I have spoken about this way back last year when there was 6 months to go. Now there's 1 month to go. You know what the head of SASA says? He says, I'm on sick leave. I can't make it. He doesn't pitch up in Parliament. Temba Godi, the head of the of SCOPA, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, says, what's going on here? I'm sick, sorry. I mean, oh my word. Anywhere else?
You cannot proclaim. I mean, these are people on social grants. These are people who don't have jobs. These are people who don't have any other means.
These are
reliant
people who don't
on
have
that.
Food.
They have
on the
they're totally reliant. They are wards of the state, effectively.
Yeah.
And the state just does not care a damn about them.
Yeah.
You've never seen such disdain for ordinary people.
But here's the thing. There isn't a plan. There isn't a plan
so
about
what
what's going to do.
What
now,
are you going to do?
Let's go back. The reason why this contract comes to an end. The Constitutional Court said this contract is unlawful. Hmm. But at the time that it found it to be unlawful, dodgy, all sorts of things. It said there is no other way of paying people. So, you know, sickening as it is, continue. But go find. This is 3 years ago, okay? They've had 3 years to come up with a plan. Last year, an IFP MP, I can't remember, Lizelle van der Merwe, I think, van der Merwe, an IFP MP said, why is it you guys are not speaking to the post bank or to the post office to do this? Because the post office is about to close down. It needs business, and this business would be the shot in the arm. Did they speak to post office? No. Let's turn around. So 3 years ago, they were told to do the job. 6 months ago, Parliament said, you and I sat in this studio 6 months ago and had this discussion about, you know what? Watch next year. Hmm. We spoke about it. No. Now it's 1 month to go. The minister doesn't even feel it's worth. This is what's going on. That contract is going to be extended with the same contractor who was found to have, the whole thing was found to be unlawful. It was illegal. It's wrong. It shouldn't happen. It's outside the bounds of the law. But hey, you know, it's going to continue. And who's going to benefit? As we speak, SASSA is negotiating with CPS, Cash Paymaster Services, and NetOne. That negotiation, if I am NetOne, Cash Paymaster Services, I'm going to arrive and say, Mabale, so you don't have an option, don't you? At the moment, I'm charging you 1 rand for every
transaction,
or I'm charging you 10 rand. I will continue, but you know, things are so hard for us. We want 20 now. What are you going to do as SASSA? Oh, no, please. Yeah. You're going to pay, my brother. You're going to pay. So we are probably going to end up paying more to pay our poor people instead of having struck a deal with FNB, APSA, Capitec, whoever, whatever the bank that may be, or whoever the new contractor may be.
Then we need to have a class action lawsuit against this company after the fact and get that money back.
Yeah, but you're
answering and put those people in jail because it's illegal. From both the department and from the company.
You can try, but this company, if I come here and say, oh, you know, I'm going to provide my services to Ben, and Ben says, oh, Justice is a fantastic rugby player, I'm going to put him in my rugby team. And I say, I want 20 rand for that. I'm not sure what exactly you're going to charge. You can have your lawsuit, but... I mean, the public representative, the person you and I put in power to represent us, should be the one who's been taken to task. But, you know, Batabile Dlamini is President Zuma's favorite. She calls for Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma to be the next president of South Africa. If she gets fired, I'm going to eat a burger. But I don't think she's going to be fired.
Well, sadly, yeah. I mean, what can we say?
Yeah.
This thing is going to become one of those stories that, you know, a couple of years later we're going to say, oh, that was the arms deal of 2017.
I think it's, there have been some harrowing stories about some people who've benefited from this. And I think it's worth thinking about some former ANC youth league leaders who have been paid humongous amounts of money by CPS and Cash Paymaster Services and NetOne, who may or may not have benefited from this.
Let's just talk about Brian Molefe. He was sworn in the other day. It's turned out that he funded Jimmy Manye through Eskom.
Yes.
To launch an attack on Pravin Gordhan, which we, of course, read about in the papers last year. We found out it was also part of paid Twitter. Mm. So the Guptas are behind this. The Guptas funded Brian Molefe. Brian Molefe funded Jimmy Manye. Mm. It's a rotten train.
He didn't just do it at Eskom. When he was at Transnet, he gave the... Jimmy Manye started an organization. It's called the Progressive Professionals Forum. And essentially the idea was that if you're a black professional or a progressive professional, you join it and pay some money to it, and they raise money and they lobby on behalf of black professionals. And while he was at Transnet, Brian Molefe, as CEO, authorized payments of about 400,000 rand for the PPF. When he was at Eskom, he did it again. What has Jimmy Manye been engaged in the past year? He's been engaged in a relentless campaign to discredit, to besmirch, to do all sorts of things, and to essentially remove Pravin Gordhan from the position of finance minister. Now, this is just so corrupt and so deeply corrupt that here is someone who is constantly being punted as this is the right man for the job of finance minister and so forth and so forth. And this guy is at the same time, his organization is funding the campaign to remove the person that he would replace.
For once and for all, can we just completely put Jimmy Manye aside as a person of consequence, because he's shown himself to be available for purchase.
Yeah.
He's shown himself to be an agent who is willing to say and do just about anything his paymaster will have him do. And he has no longer got a conscience. When he speaks on behalf of black business or anything else, we should completely disregard his comments.
You should know that he's paid to do that and by someone.
And his mouth is like a sewer at the moment when it comes to saying anything sensible or reasonable. I think we can write off Jimmy Money, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, this surely makes it even more difficult for Brian Molefe to occupy any kind of public office. And bear in mind that when he was sworn in as an MP last week, you started paying for him again.
Mm.
There was a short hiatus where we weren't paying for him. A couple of months,
a very short hiatus,
where he spent his own money at the Shebeen in Saxonwold.
Well, spent your money, which accumulated
he
for, yeah.
And many properties, which he's also got. Apparently, yeah. He got a really, really good deal on a big house in some big estate in Pretoria.
Yeah.
Pretoria seems to be the place where all these people are retiring.
Maybe I should go back home.
He's now back on our payroll.
You're paying him 80,000 rand a month.
Jesus.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's what it is. It's sad and miserable. Will he become finance minister? I think that President Zuma is weak at that moment. He's not weak. It's a stalemate. If President Zuma fires Pravin Gordhan, the SACP will definitely walk out of that cabinet. I think we'll have a crisis, and President Zuma doesn't want to trigger that crisis.
Not now.
Not now.
He's not strong enough to deal with it now.
Exactly. So I think yes, there might be a cabinet reshuffle, but it will be a minor one where Brian Molefe goes to maybe energy, where he will definitely buy us a nuclear power plant, or to public enterprises, where he will have oversight over Eskom, Transnet, and we'll see more payments rather than less towards people like Jimmy Mani, or perhaps the Deputy Ministry of Finance, but not the Finance Ministry itself.
Just finally, this is a very big deal. I think many people in this country are concerned about it, even though Cyril Ramaphosa says we are a nation of loving, kind, caring hugs and kisses to every illegal immigrant. We have xenophobia again rearing its ugly head.
Mm.
This is probably the biggest, ugliest scar on what we present ourselves to be, an open democracy that cares about human rights. There is a second class of citizen in South Africa, and they're called illegal immigrants.
Yeah. For me, the key here is that the chickens are coming home to roost. In 2002 in Zimbabwe, there was an election. At the time, President Zuma sent a delegation of observers. Two of them were beaten up by Robert Mugabe's government forces. Two judges were sent by Thabo Mbeki to assess the freeness and the fairness of those elections. They came back. The Kampepe report was handed to him, and it was hidden and it was secret, and no one saw it. The Mail and Guardian fought for nearly 8 years to get it released, and finally we know what was in the Kampepe report. That election was stolen. For years and years, Robert Mugabe has run rampant in Zimbabwe, has beaten up his own people at the moment. Pastor Evan Mawarire is incarcerated. People like Morgan Tsvangirai were detained, beaten up, tortured. People like that incredible lawyer, what was her name? I think it was Justina Mukoki, were tortured for months and months on end. And a lot of Zimbabweans had no option but to come to South Africa to flee their country. But many had to flee because there were no jobs and there was no way they could live under that regime. They come here, they find jobs, they work, they start businesses, they do other things. There are many other fellow Africans who do the same. But our failure in the 2000s to stand up and say what is happening in Zimbabwe might be done by our own comrade, might be done by someone who we have admired, who participated and helped us in our struggle against apartheid. we fail to use our voice. We fail to use our voice to stop Robert Mugabe. And so now, Malusi Gigaba and Home Affairs are going to spar to, you're having your dinner, you're having your dessert in a restaurant, and there's Home Affairs walking in, raiding and saying, we're arresting this Zimbabwean illegal da-da-da-da-da-da. They would not be here if we had used our voice and said, what is happening to the north of us? Might, whoever is in charge, it might be our best ever friend. But it is wrong, and it is ordinary Zimbabweans who are being tortured, who are being jailed, who are being deprived of livelihoods. So we can say now that this, you know, people must, you know, we're contorting ourselves trying to kick Zimbabweans out of a job at Spare or McDonald's or Spa or wherever. But at the end of the day, we would not be sitting with this problem if we had used our voice in the past. So these things, in my view, come back to haunt you. The idea of migration is complex. It's complex across the world. You look at what's happening to the United States now, the protectionism that Donald Trump speaks about, the idea of walls and so forth. It's not just us who are facing it, but we have to face up to the fact that we are complicit in some of the problems that we have. And so without acknowledging that, without acknowledging the fact that we are where we are because of our failures and our failure to speak and speak and speak again against what was happening in Zimbabwe, has brought us to this point.
Yeah. So there is no such thing as a free lunch. And if you don't speak up when you need to speak up, it's going to come back and haunt you.
It's exactly what you said earlier on. You know, if you don't do the right things now, if you think that you can get away with allowing someone to just expropriate land without compensation, once you have that land, someone will expropriate it without compensation from you. It's exactly the same thing. We didn't speak on Zimbabwe. It was a disgrace.
We wanted to protect our friends.
Thabo Mbeki's legacy is amazing and strong on the economic front. But when it comes to Zimbabwe and AIDS, this is where he failed everyone. He failed the people that he professes to love most, Africans. And those Zimbabweans, contort yourself as much as you like, those are Africans. And they had to flee their own country. And they're here now.
They must thank Thabo Mbeki.
Must thank Thabo Mbeki and his foreign affairs minister at the time, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma.
They should, when they arrest illegal immigrants, go, I arrest you in the name of Thabo Mbeki. Maybe then the message will get there. All right. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely to be here, guys.
Well, lovely to be here. Always thought-provoking and sometimes not exactly an easy pill to swallow when we talk about these things, especially stuff like xenophobia, which pains us so much.
Which is why I say have some Nandos.
Yeah, thank you.
And make yourself a better human being.
There we go. Nando's, the burning platform. They bring it to you every Thursday with Justice Malala. CliffCentral.com.